If you ask a stupid question, you get a stupid answer, right?
These are steps we all must take to protect Scotland.
The people of Scotland will not be disrespected by this Parliament. Mr. Speaker.
Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of Scottish Politics Explained. I hope you've had a good week. So for today's episode, we are going to focus on the reported anti-abortion presence here in Scotland. So you might actually have read about it in various newspapers, but for those of you who haven't, basically what is happening is that there are some pro-life organisations or groups that have been reported to organise vigils outside clinics and hospitals providing abortion services, and not only here in Scotland, but across the UK. In these days in particular, though, a lot of the attention has been on the Chalmers Sexual Health Centre in Edinburgh, where anti-abortion campaigners have been seen standing up, holding signs, or directly approaching patients and staff going in. So to talk about this matter a bit more in depth, I have the pleasure of chatting today with Lucy Grieve, who is the founder of Back Off Scotland, which is a grassroots campaign aiming at the introduction of buffer zones here in Scotland. So hi Lucy, how are you today?
Hi, I'm good, thank you, Iris, how are you?
Same here, thank you, and thank you for coming on the podcast. So could you start by talking about yourself a little bit and about the campaign?
Yeah, so my name's Lucy Grieve and I'm a final year undergraduate student at the University of Edinburgh. I'm also a co-founder and the director of Back Off Scotland, and Back Off Scotland's a small grassroots organisation campaigning for the Scottish Government to enact legislation for 150 metre buffer zones or protest free zones around clinics providing abortions in Scotland. We initially launched, it was just an Edinburgh based sort of endeavour a year ago, so in October 2020 we were called Back Off Chalmers, sort of in response to a surge of anti-choice activity that was taking place outside of Chalmers Street Sexual Health Clinic, which is right beside Edinburgh Uni, during the autumn lockdown last year. And then sort of once we realised the sort of scale of the project, we scaled that up and we became Back Off Scotland and set our targets on nationwide legislation.
Could you expand a bit more on this anti-choice activity that you mentioned?
Yeah, so anti-choice activity, this can be anything from just a presence outside a clinic. So whether it's holding placards, handing out information leaflets, directly approaching people that are going to, patients that are going to seek medical treatment. It can really be anything. It can be, you know, holding rosaries and chanting and praying. It's just a physical presence outside, a visible physical presence, I'd say, outside a clinic that's providing abortion services.
So basically what you are suggesting is to kind of counteract this presence by introducing buffer zones. Could you tell me a bit more about what these buffer zones are? So what do they entail?
Yeah, so buffer zones, the way they're best described, are protest-free zones. They aren't sort of zones that are marked by anything. There's no sort of physical boundary, but it's just a sort of legal area in which you wouldn't be allowed to protest, or as we see it, create a tangible barrier to accessing healthcare. So, well, we believe, first off, I guess the buffer zones are needed to protect those accessing services from intimidation and harassment. In our mind, abortion, not even in our mind, abortion is a legal healthcare procedure, and protests that take place at healthcare facilities, you know, they're wholly inappropriate. It has nothing to do with freedom of speech, we're really clear on that, and nothing to do with freedom of protest, because we support both of those things. But we just think that protests need to take place in appropriate locations, such as Parliament. And some local councils in England, for example, Ealing in London, they have buffer zones implemented. They went through local council legislation, like the Scottish Government wants to do up here. But this means that the legislation there is only temporary, and every 3 years a consultation must be undertaken to see if they'll be renewed. And there's quite a lot of controversy surrounding that. It's quite a lengthy legal process as well.
And have they been implemented elsewhere, like in other countries or in other parts of the UK?
Yeah, so I know about Canada and New Zealand. There have been enacted in part or in full across the country. There's been a push also to have it nationwide in England, but the ones that kind of stick out to me are Canada and New Zealand, and they're very strong in the sort of access to healthcare barrier that's been created, and they have sort of a zero tolerance policy on that.
Do you think they are working well as a system? Are there any other things that can be done to kind of protect women that are accessing healthcare services, in particular when they are related to reproductive health?
I think it's a really good start because it means also that you can't have any sort of protest at all. So it's not just, you know, anti-choice activity. It's even people that are sort of protesting pro-choice, which is great. And it, a lot of people find that supportive, but it just means that when you go to a healthcare facility to seek these treatments, you're not met with anything. You're just going to your appointment and you don't have to think about or sort of run into the risk of being confronted by anybody. And I think that's always going to be a positive thing. And I think it's a movement we'll see expand in the future. I think it'll pick up pace in other countries, but I do think it's a sort of key component of protecting a woman's right to accessing healthcare.
That's quite interesting what you say in terms of not having any kind of protest outside clinics. So on the one hand, I'm sure it could sound, you know, a bit weird in terms of freedom of speech and, you know, freedom of protest and everything, but it also kind of takes into account the fact that, you know, going to a hospital, going to a clinic is an extremely personal and private experience, which unfortunately it's not always positive or even just, you know, neutral in a way. A lot of people that are going to hospitals, it can turn out to be quite negative and have a deeper negative consequence on either their mental or physical health or even both. So I mean, even in this particular case that we are discussing, I think if you're going to a clinic after you've had a miscarriage, for example, and you see people protesting either for or against abortion, that's maybe not exactly what you need at that moment. It can be quite triggering for you. So how would you respond though to people who say that because of freedom of speech and because of freedom protests, they should be able to kind of express their views outside of clinics and hospitals, especially because, you know, this is not happening only in Edinburgh, as we have established, but it's happening across Scotland. And you mentioned that it's not always just kind of a presence that is just standing there, but that there are people that have reported to be approached by protesters.
Yeah, definitely. I think being really strong in the message that we do support freedom of speech, we do support freedom of protest, and we do believe that everybody is entitled to their own opinion, whatever that opinion may be. We just think that the sort of inscription of the opinion on a body, politicizing of a woman's body is just wholly inappropriate. You know, by all means, go and protest and have your views known to the lawmakers and the people that can sort of change policy, but there's nothing constructive that's going to come out of protesting in front of a healthcare clinic, a hospital, where somebody's undergoing treatment. It's not fair, and it's just inappropriate. And I think we've heard so many stories from so many different people that have been affected by it, and you know, the one common theme was that they all felt intimidated and they all felt harassed by the presence. So it's really far reaching. It's not just people that are accessing abortion services that are you know, feeling this when faced with protesters.
And do you know who is behind these vigils, and then in particular behind this longer campaign called 40 Days for Life? Is it like a network of different organizations, or is it just the one?
Yeah, so I mean, if I just kind of delve into a little bit more about the people that we've had contacting us with their stories, this you know, we received so many messages, countless messages from women across Scotland who sort of faced it firsthand. So, you know, from a university student seeking an abortion after her contraceptive pill failed, to, you know, a teenager that was sexually assaulted and had to have a sexual healthcare check from a clinic and was called a murderer by these anti-choicers outside the clinic on her way out, and also to a woman who had to abort her baby due to severe fetal abnormalities, and also even messages from doctors that perform the abortions themselves. You know, the stories are endless and they're wide reaching, and the level of intimidation and harassment, you know, it's the same from whenever they glance at them on their way into their appointment, or if they you know, have a sort of encounter with them. And I think that's one thing that we are strong on. We've got a girl in our campaign team, Lily Roberts, who got an abortion at Glasgow Queen Elizabeth University Hospital. And she went in really early in the morning for the procedure and left late afternoon, and the protesters were still there. And that was a long day, and I'm sure she didn't expect them to be there either times. And her boyfriend at the time actually went out to just get some air, and he was approached directly. So it's not even females, it's males as well. And that was outside a maternity unit, so really he could have been there for anything, you know. It's just, that hospital, Queen Elizabeth University Hospital in Glasgow, that actually had in 2018 the largest anti-abortion clinic protest out of any site in the UK, and that over 200 people there for a candlelight vigil. I mean, it's just totally inappropriate. It can be a range. We've seen, a number of different sort of groups protesting abortion and reproductive health care, but currently 40 Days for Life are doing a 40-day long sort of run of daily protests, and they're actually a Texas founded group, and their motto is, I quote it, it's they're committed to ending the scourge of abortion. Since the beginning of 2017, BPAS, who we work quite closely with, they're the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, they're aware of 7 hospitals and clinics in Scotland that have been targeted, and they're all across different health boards. You know, it's as far away as Aberdeen, it's as rural as Larbert, and twice a year there's 40 days of protest in a row, one during Lent and one during autumn, where they stand outside the entrance with placards and leaflets, and they often chant or pray. And this 80 days total a year, that's 20% of the year where there's a tangible and absolute direct presence from anti-choicers. So it's actually a significant portion of the year, and that's only, you know, scrapes the surface of it.
Yeah, definitely. And so at what point is the campaign just now? What are your next steps?
Yeah, so in February, we successfully petitioned Edinburgh City Council, and they passed our motion in support of buffer zones. So buffer zones in February this year were set to become a thing in Edinburgh, and we had really initially felt supported by the Scottish Government as well after buffer zone commitments were made in their manifesto, the SNP manifesto. And then, after summer in the Programme for Government and also the Women's Health Plan, we met with the Women's Health Minister, Marie Todd, and very early on in that meeting, it unfortunately became apparent that she wasn't committed to sort of working to find a solution with us. And she said that government level legislation would be disproportionate. We don't see how it's disproportionate, you know, when figures show that over 70% of Scottish women, you know, live in health board areas that have recorded instances of protest in the past few years. But we have a great sort of support basis in the opposition. The Lib Dems and Scottish Labour and the Greens all back us. Labour and the Lib Dems had mentioned us in their manifesto, and the Greens also came out last week to say that they fully supported our campaign. So we're really in a space just now where we're trying to get the opposition parties to sort of put the pressure on the SNP and on the government to rethink their stance about, you know, local-led intervention, and actually realise that it's a national responsibility, and it needs to be sort of an unequivocal and united response to this threat to healthcare access.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And is there a way that people can help you or can help the campaign?
Yeah, so I definitely say following us on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook is the way to do it. We're always changing kind of our call to action, whether that's, signing a petition, or whether that's writing to your MSP for sort of a preloaded template. It's changing, but keeping sort of in the loop on our Instagram and our social medias really helps and means that we can get as much sort of backing as we can and support from the community and across Scotland as we go forward.
And they can find you at Back Off Scotland, right?
Yep, we're just Back Off Scotland on everything.
That's perfect. Thank you so much, Lucy, for coming on the podcast and, you know, for giving us this insight into what is happening with our campaign and the potential benefit of buffer zones around healthcare providers. It's been great talking to you, and thanks again.
Oh, thank you so much as well. I'm really delighted that you've had me on.
This was the third episode of the new season of Scottish Politics Explained. You can follow Scottish Politics Explained on Instagram and Twitter at ScottPolePodcast, and you can find all the complete transcripts of our episodes at scottishpoliticsexplained.wordpress.com. If you wish to support a podcast, thank you, first of all, and you can do so by just clicking on the link in the episode description. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great week.